Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Now, I don't know what happened in 1983. I can't speak about it because I wasn't there. But I can tell you allegations of a sexual nature that was not disclosed to this body, to our voters, that is not transparency.
Every single one of us deserves to have that opportunity to go through that process of discovery and let ethics make the recommendation. If we continue to go straight to expelling a member, one day it might be one of you, and you would prefer, I would think, to be able to have that opportunity to go through that process of discovery.
We're going
to
get rid of the monikers, and we're going to bring everybody together. We are going to be Republicans. We are going to be people who are united to re-elect President Trump in 2020, just as the RNC announced.
I've always said that I do hope that there is a Republican who challenges the president in the primary. I still hope that somebody does, but that somebody won't be me.
And with us to talk about the present and possible future are Representative David Stringer, along with Kelly Ward taking over as chair of the Arizona GOP and more, our attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera, and consultant Chris Baker of Trailhead Strategic Communications. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Roy, initial reaction to what's going on with the David Stringer situation, the fact that an ethics investigation, different from what we saw with Don Shooter.
Well, I feel it's a bit of deja vu. I mean, I was on this show maybe weeks ago when the controversial comments that he made about African Americans and immigrants were in the news. You know, here we are with these convictions and certainly charges brought of a sexual nature. That's all we really know. I suspect that in the near future, the Ethics Committee is going to do their job and we're going to find out the more specifics about what occurred. And then they're going to go through the process, just like I said back when his comments first aired about deciding whether they want to expel him or not. I mean, the standard, you know, under the Constitution is disorderly behavior. I mean, the 2/3 of the legislature have to decide that that's, you know, what occurred here. But, you know, I'm not certainly that surprised, to be honest with you. But at the same time, it's pretty bad.
Chris, how much does this take it to a higher level if, in fact, what potentially happened in Maryland in the 1980s, racist comments are offensive to most, if not all of us, but at the same time, that becomes a free speech issue. This could be something different.
This could be something very, very different. I'm actually quite surprised he hasn't left yet. Most times in these situations, politician does the honorable thing and resign. But the bottom line is Stringer is a disgrace. He's a disgrace because of the racial comments. I have a feeling, and I think a lot of others do, that what he said went on in the early 80s in Maryland and what actually went on are going to come out to be two very, very different things. If he was smart, he'd resign. We'll see if he stays and fights, but I don't think, let me rephrase, I think this will be his last session as a legislator in Arizona.
Chris, what do you make of the, I don't want to call it drama, but the debate that was had in the House this week about whether or not just to move to expel him now or to let it go through the ethics investigation, which, of course, did not happen last year with Don Shooter?
You know, I'm sympathetic to their desire not to allow any legislator to make a motion to expel without, you know, going through the due process. I'm sympathetic to it. Personally, I wish they would have taken Representative Boulding up on his offer and done it, but I'm sympathetic to the idea that, you know, allowing a motion to come to the floor, you know, out of nowhere, but without any investigation could set a very bad precedent.
Yeah, is there a legitimate due process question here, Roy?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you can make arguments both ways. I mean, I think the Democratic perspective, Reginald Boulding's perspective is, you know, we've already heard and seen enough. I mean, we know he's been convicted of some crimes in Maryland, which he didn't disclose. We know what he was alleged to have done, or at least what the offenses were in Maryland. We know his racist remarks from, you know, in the past. And so if knowing all of this, that's not enough, then, what is the standard here? I understand that perspective. Now, on the other hand, as a lawyer, you know, knowing that it is important to do a thorough investigation and find out the extent of the, you know, the facts, the truth, I understand that position as well. But I think ultimately all roads are going to lead probably to the same thing.
Chris, at the core of this politically— and this we can't just magically snap our fingers here. But from the standpoint of how Republicans tend to vote, wouldn't David Stringer's departure be a great thing for the GOP to get a reliable Republican vote and not have the controversy of someone who says these blatantly racist things, for example?
Oh, I think that's exactly the case. I think I haven't met a single or spoken to a single Republican legislator who does not want him gone. They wish this would all just go away. It's not a coincidence that you've seen the Speaker of the House and others call on him to resign. You know, in politics, you know, that's a hint, hint. Do the right thing. Get out. Because if you don't, we're going to do it for you. And politically, you know, this is not good for Republicans. This is a terrible narrative to have out in the press. And, you know, like I said, I think I speak for all Republicans when I'd say if David Stringer has one iota, you know, of respect left for his party, do the right thing and leave.
And Roy, do Democrats for any reason, again, politically, that can be different than how we actually feel as moral, ethical human beings. So are you feeling by Democrats that having Stringer there isn't such a bad thing because it might make the GOP look bad?
I'm not sure. I mean, the what we're talking about here, these allegations, the comments and stuff are so repulsive in a lot of ways that I'm not sure Democrats are looking at it like, let's keep him around to benefit from this politically. I think at the end of the day, Republicans and Democrats should have a minimum standard of behavior that we expect from our legislators. And, you know, having somebody that doesn't meet that standard in the body, I think, is offensive to both sides.
How do you guys see this ultimately playing out? I mean, we've seen, for example, last year, Don Shooter, as we talked about, was expelled without an ethics investigation. In years past, we've seen ethics investigations go forward. And in some cases, in many cases, the legislator at the heart of that ends up resigning before the chamber takes up their punishment, censure, expulsion, whatever. Roy, how do you see this playing out?
Well, that's what happened with Scott Bungard several years ago. We had another Republican legislator who went through this process, different facts, of course, but you know, we went through the ethics committee procedure, and eventually he just decided to resign when we were nearing the end of it. Could that happen here? I mean, that certainly is possible. I don't, you know, necessarily think a resignation before that is possible because that's, you know, Stringer is indicating he's not going to do that. So it looks like we are actually going to go through this.
I think we'll begin to go down that path. You know, Stringer is betting on no further information coming out. He's betting on the frankly preposterous story that he's put out will not be contradicted by, you know, any other facts. I think once that happens, and I know several reporters are trying to get those facts, I think at that point he probably leaves. I think what a lot, you know, the difficulty of what Stringer has done here is he's in, as I had one legislator say to me yesterday, you know, if I find out he's a liar, if I find out he lied to me, there's nothing he can do to save his job. They all want him gone, period. I mean, these are very, very serious allegations, no matter how you look at it. I agree with Roy. You know, there is a certain standard, there should be a certain standard to serve, you know, in public office. He's clearly violated him. He should resign. He should go. I think he will stay as long as the story he has put out and ironically advertised on Facebook. The moment that's contradicted, I think, is the moment he leaves.
Last couple of minutes of this segment, I want to move to Don Shooter. We mentioned Don Shooter, of course, based on last year's example. Roy, he was in the news again this week filing a lawsuit. Without getting into the specifics, as an attorney, which you could, what do you make of the fact that he's going after Speaker Mesner, going after former Chief of Staff Kirk Adams, based on the position he held as an appropriations chair?
Well, I mean, from a legal perspective, I think very long odds that this kind of lawsuit's going to be successful or not. I mean, I just don't see it. I don't see the basis of his allegations having really any merit at all. But, you know, clearly he feels like he was wronged or slighted by being expelled from the committee, you know, from the legislature, and he's trying to, you know, right the wrong as he sees it. But, you know, we all know, again, you know, what those allegations were of, you know, sexual, you know, harassment and things like that. And going back to Chris and I's point, I mean, if there is a minimum standard, certainly Don Shooter did not meet that minimum standard in serving in the legislature.
Is this an attention grab, Chris? Is this to fix a reputation that is already soiled almost beyond recognition?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it is an attempt to get further attention. I think it is an attempt to settle scores, you know, from a legislator who, you know, frankly, you know, the allegations against him were pretty cut and dry. I think there are, what, 9-10 accusers. Why he's doing it, I don't know. Roy's, you know, we're both attorneys, or at least I'm not a practicing attorney, but, you know, the cost of prosecuting a suit like that is expensive. I don't know what kind of deal he has with Tom Horn, his new attorney, but I don't see it going very far. I think it's just a legal attempt to take a shot, settle scores with some people he's upset at.
Is this another one, Chris, another issue that you think Republicans at the Capitol just wish would just go away at this point?
You know, here's the thing with Schroeder. I mean, most Republicans view, you know, view the situation as we did our job. We did our job. We were made aware of the accusations. We expelled him, and that's it. You know, if he wants to run around and file lawsuits alleging crazy conspiracies, not a lot we can do to stop that. And I don't think most people pay much attention to Schroeder anymore.
Roy, what are your final thoughts on that?
I think that's right. I mean, I think most people have kind of moved on from Don Schroeder in a lot of ways. So I'm not sure there's sort of any political benefit by Democrats sort of making this a major issue. You know, I think it does still, though, raise, you know, questions about, you know, what is appropriate by how men in power and how they behave. And, you know, we talked for a while last time around with having a sexual harassment policy at the legislature, and, you know, those conversations went on. And so certainly, I mean, I think the baseline of what he did, I think, is something we should still be talking about. I'm not sure it's so much about him anymore.
And Chris, finally, briefly, did we understand, did we get an impression of what David Stringer feels about expelling his fellow lawmakers, the fact that he was one of the few that voted to not oust Don Schroeder?
I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
I don't think that's, you know, that's not a coincidence. I think it is a reflection, you know, frankly, of the kind of person Stringer is. You know, Representative, now State Senator Ugenti, is a client of mine. I am probably more aware of the details of that situation than most. Anyone who had even a modicum of understanding of the way Schroeder acted would have voted to expel him immediately. The fact that Stringer declined to do that, I think, speaks volumes.
That's Chris Baker. Also here is Roy Herrera with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. It's the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are former congressional staffer and attorney Roy Herrera and consultant Chris Baker of Trailhead Strategic Communications. So, Chris, last Saturday was a busy day for both the GOP and the Democratic parties in Arizona. Kelly Ward is now the new GOP chair. Interesting, considering that she took on John McCain, Jeff Flake, Martha McSally. Is this significant?
I don't believe it is. Look, the people who choose the state party chairman in the Republican Party are a very small representative sample of Republicans at large. Clearly, they had some problems with Ward's predecessor and the outcomes of the 2018 elections. I think that hurt him, and I think it opened up a gaping hole for her to drive right through and ultimately grab the chairmanship. You know, parties used to, you know, state parties used to be important 20, 30 years ago. In modern American politics, they're just not that important anymore. So who is and who isn't chairman of the state party, I don't think really matters.
Roy, whether symbolic or not, are Democrats happy to see Kelly Ward in that chair? Because she's a person who's known for being inflammatory.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I woke up with a smile on my face the next morning. I mean, I think it's a great development for Democrats. And I'm going to disagree a little bit with Chris. I mean, I do think that the power of the party, the importance of the party, has diminished in the last, you know, decades, let's say, or years. With that said, I mean, it is important or beneficial for, you know, a political party to have their party structure be efficient, right? Because I think that in the last cycle, the Democratic Party, you know, after years of not being particularly good, actually had a really good year. And I think that only benefited the Democratic side, Democratic candidates. And so, you know, while it's not the end of the world, I think, for Republicans, certainly I think, you know, if you're a Republican, you want your candidates to win. You want to have a, you know, well-functioning Republican Party. And then also from a symbolic perspective, that I think is what is going to probably be most beneficial to Democrats, because, you know, we're going to, you know, put Kelly Ward's face as the face of Republicans, right? And, you know, when Donald Trump and Martha McSally are doing their rallies standing next to Kelly Ward, you know, it's going to be Democrats pointing out about Kelly Ward's views and how out of step they are with everyday Americans and Arizonans, for that matter.
Chris, what do you think this means for fundraising with the Republican Party? Obviously, you know, there's a million different ways you can get money to candidates and campaigns now, but does this affect the way that Republicans and Republican candidates will be soliciting money and raising money?
Not candidates. You know, as someone who does, you know, works with candidates, does campaigns, all we ever wanted out of a state party is a chairman who can raise money and keep their mouth shut. We don't look at the state party chairman as the spokesperson for the party. You know, it's really up to Kelly Ward. If Kelly Ward keeps her mouth shut, you know, is an administrator, does the job well, then I think people will probably be willing to give her a chance. If she continues along the path that her career has been for the last few years, then we'll just move on and adapt.
Has she proven herself as somebody who can be a fundraiser, a good fundraiser, if nothing else, for the party?
Well, there's a couple different ways of fundraising. By all accounts, she seems to be pretty prolific at small donor fundraising, and that does play a role. However, you know, the bulk of the money that comes into a party comes from two sources. It either comes from large donors who I think are going to be very skeptical and very much take a wait-and-see attitude to see what she does. And, you know, the upside for Kelly potentially is the Republican National Committee's rolling in money. You know, they could very easily prop up the state party, you know, for the next 2 years and not miss the money. I don't know if they're going to do that. I've heard conflicting, you know, conflicting analysis. You know, if Republicans choose not to send money to the party, it will go somewhere else to benefit candidates.
Now, I spoke with Kelly Ward. We heard it in the last hour of the show, and she talked about how she and Martha McSally are friends, and Martha McSally called her on Saturday. Chris, even though you're the Republican, I'm going to start with Roy on this one. Does that make sense, Roy, considering the campaign that was run and the fact that Kelly Ward obviously was not, in the campaign, a fan of Martha McSally?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think either one has much of a choice, right? I mean, at the end of the day, Martha McSally is running for re-election, and Kelly Ward is the state party chair. So it benefits both of them to at least publicly put on, you know, this idea that there's unity and that they are friends. You know, again, from a Democratic perspective, I like that. I mean, I you know, like that Martha McSally and Kelly Ward are friends and that they're appearing with each other. Because again, you know, some of the positions that Kelly Ward has taken over the last few years are, you know, I think problematic politically.
Chris, considering the history of Kelly Ward, as I mentioned, the people she's challenged, do you think in any way, as chair, can she covertly encourage someone to run against Martha McSally, even to get a different perspective out there? Or do you think because it's this short cycle for McSally with the special election, she's going to say, stay away, everybody?
Look, if Kelly Ward has a death wish, yeah, she can do it. You know, she can covertly encourage someone to run against Senator McSally. My guess is that Kelly Ward sees this as her last chance and will attempt to stay on, you know, good behavior. You know, look, I actually disagree with Roy on one thing. I don't think you're going to see Senator McSally making very many appearances with Kelly Ward.
We just need one for the picture.
So, guys, we have just a few minutes left. I want to ask you about a pretty significant thing that happened at the Capitol this week, which was the approval yesterday of the drought contingency plan. Of course, we heard just a few minutes ago that, according to the Bureau of Reclamation, that isn't the final step in the process, so still some questions there. But, Roy, I'm wondering, when you look at, I mean, these bills passed pretty much unanimously, almost unanimously at the Capitol. Does that tell us anything about how, with the new numbers, especially in the state house, people might be able to work together across party lines? Or is water one of those issues where it's so unique and so sort of fundamental to the state that, like, politics gets put aside for that issue but not others?
Well, I mean, the optimist in me would say, you know, this is, and also as someone who likes bipartisanship and likes, you know, the idea of both parties working with each other to tackle big issues, that this is the beginning of that kind of era. Unfortunately, I'm a realist, and I think, you know, it is this situation where things like water are things that people typically agree on, but when you get to other things like education funding, like, for example, there might be a stronger disagreement, and I think that's probably how it's going to continue.
Chris, do you see this as kind of like the opioid issue last year, where Democrats and Republicans worked together early in the session and didn't really work together on much else the rest of the year?
You know, it's tough to say. You know, the unique thing about water is every single legislator has constituents, whether they're business individuals, farmers, what have you, for whom this matters. And I think, you know, you look at in most legislative bodies, when you have issues like that, and you alluded to the opioid, opioid legislation, they tend to get together. They tend to work, you know, bipartisan. But, you know, whether they do that going forward, I think is distinctly up in the air. But let me just say this one thing. You do have a House that is 31-29. They have to make a decision whether they want to move legislation or not. It does change the dynamics, of the House. But I think it remains to be seen whether Republicans feel they can hold their caucus together or not.
That will be interesting to watch. Guys, I want to finish up. I was extremely intrigued, though not surprised. I think any of us were. Senator Jeff Flake's now going to be a commentator for CBS. There was talk about CNN, maybe even MSNBC at some point. He's not going to challenge President Trump, he says, either. Roy, were you disappointed in that?
Disappointed is not really the right word. I mean, I'm not surprised, obviously, that he went to become a commentator and a pundit. I mean, I always thought once he said he wasn't going to be running for re-election that that's eventually what he was going to do and go on book tours and things like that. He's been critical of President Trump. I've agreed with a lot of those criticisms, particularly about, President Trump's, behavior and disrespect for the office and things like that, according to Flake. But I'm not surprised he's ultimately not running against President Trump, because at the end of the day, that wouldn't go anywhere. I mean, at the end of the day, there's no way that Jeff Flake could beat President Trump in a primary, and I think Senator Flake knows that.
Chris, how significant has Senator Flake been? He served in the House for many years, served the one term in the Senate. Now he's going to be a commentator. He became famous nationally for a lot of different things, but more particularly because of his criticism of the president. Is this Jeff Flake's sort of swan song as a big public figure?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Jeff dramatically underestimated the blowback that he would receive when he wrote the book and when he began to go down that path. And, you know, to make a tough situation even tougher, you know, he ended up, you know, effectively criticizing Trump, but voting with Republicans most of the time. So, you know, he found himself in the position no politician wants to be in, which is he's upsetting both sides. And I think the last couple of years were tough for him. And I've known Jeff since he first ran for Congress. From the very beginning, Jeff had a love-hate relationship with the job. You know, he loved the policy. He loved being a part of that. Hated the politics, hated the other aspects of the job. And I think when things began to go south for him, I think the decision was quite easy.
We want to finish up because Mark is really curious about this, because the Super Bowl is this weekend. I'll allow Mark to do the honors on this one.
Well, I mean, anybody can ask, you know, what the final score is going to be, who's going to win. I'm most curious about what's on each of your relative menus for the Super Bowl, because really it's a holiday of gluttony more than football. Right? So, Roy, are you a nachos guy? Are you a pizza guy? Like, what's on your agenda?
I'm more of a grill kind of person, okay. And a smoker. So I will be smoking a brisket, and then we'll have so there are other things going on, maybe some wings and maybe some nachos. I'm a pizza person.
You know, we had a feature on the show earlier this week about whether you can tell whether someone's liberal or conservative based on how neat their house is and what kind of food they like. So I'm not sure we can figure Chris, what?
Look, as the father of two teenage boys,
lots of food.
Pizza, more pizza, more pizza, more pizza. And, to their credit, they'll be satisfied with that. So my guess is we'll probably order 5-6 pizzas, and hopefully my wife and I will get a piece.
That is Chris Baker of Trailhead Strategic Communications, also here, attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.